Let's pick up our study in Hosea chapter number 8, verse number 1. Remember that Hosea is a prophet of the 8th century BC. He is prophesying particularly against northern Israel, but southern Judah every once in a while comes underneath his pointed message as well, because God is about to bring judgment on all of the Middle East through the Assyrians. And the northern kingdom is going to go into Assyrian exile, whereas the southern kingdom is going to get a very good scare brought into their lives by the Assyrians. But God will protect them and give them more time before their own Babylonian exile. So chapter number 8, verse 1 says, "Set the trumpet to your lips." So this is a warning trumpet, a signal trumpet that was supposed to be sounded when a city was being attacked by a warring army. Then it says, "One like a vulture." The word can also be eagle. The language is not as precise as we'd like as to which species of this predatory bird or scavenger bird we're talking about. But the idea is that this is a bird that's hovering up and above the house of he who is, because they've transgressed my covenant and rebelled against my law. More than likely, the house of the Lord here is not a reference to the temple in Jerusalem. It is much more likely a reference to the Israeli people as being the house of he who is. So we've got either a vulture or an eagle that's circling above. And the reason is because God is about to bring the Assyrians down in judgment for rebelling against his covenant and against his law. Interestingly enough, some of the imagery of the Assyrians picture their kings and their gods as a hovering bird or a flying bird about to strike. Verse 2, "To me they cry, 'My God, we, Israel, know you.'" Israel has spurned the good, the enemy shall pursue him. So we have Israel begging God for assistance, saying, "We know you, we've got a relationship with us. You've got to step in and help us." But God's response is, "No, you've done the opposite of my covenant. And so, yes, you are going to come under the curses of that covenant, which includes being pursued by the enemy." Continuing with what God has to say on this topic. Verse 4, "They made kings, but not through me. They set up princes, but I knew it not." So we're talking now about the series of dynasties that have occurred in northern Israel, and several of them recently have been through assassinations and internecine rivalry. Well, God was not in the middle of that. That was them fighting amongst themselves. Verse 4 continues, "With their silver and gold, they made idols for their own destruction." So they were an idolatrous people. And then he speaks directly to the sin of northern Israel from its very inception. "I have spurned your calf, O Samaria. My anger burns against them. How long will they be incapable of innocence?" The golden calves were put in place by Jeroboam the First because he was concerned that if the Israelis kept going out of the northern territory into Judah to worship at the temple, they might want to go back under the king of Judah's authority. So he tried to convince them, "We'll just represent he who is, the God of creation, the God of Israel that brought us out of Egypt and into the promised land. We'll represent him by these golden calves." And he put one at the southern border region at Bethel, put another one very far north at Dan. Well, the northern calf has probably disappeared in several of the invasions that have taken place in the last few years. But the southern calf may in fact have been replicated in several other cities. But the main calf was probably still at Bethel, the original one. And so God says of that, I've spurned your calf, O Samaria. My anger burns against them. How long are you going to be incapable of innocence? For it was from Israel. A craftsman made it. It was not God. The calf of Samaria shall be broken to pieces. So God predicts that this golden calf that they'd been worshiping in the southern part, down by Bethel, is going to be destroyed. Now, later we'll find out that it's going to be taken away as booty, and then it'll be probably broken up and melted down. And the reason for it is a semi-famous passage, verse 7, for they sow the wind, and they shall reap the whirlwind. So the idea is we got a little bit of blowing going on with the beginning of their sin. But at the end, God is going to bring a tornado of judgment. The standing grain has no heads. It shall yield no flour. If it were to yield, strangers would devour it. Again, a reference to the judgment phases of walking away from the covenant. You'd sometimes have a famine because the crops wouldn't produce well. And other times you would have invasions where whatever crops you did have were stolen by invaders. Israel is swallowed up, verse 8 says. Already they are among the nations as a useless vessel. For they have gone to Assyria, a wild donkey wandering alone. So already they've entered into a covenant arrangement, a relationship with Assyria to the north. And some Israelis are probably already living in the Assyrian Empire because they've become slaves, having been captured or owing money. But we know that the latest king, Menachem, went voluntarily to the king of Assyria, that'd be Tiglath-Pileser III, and paid him like 1,000 talents of silver, which he got by super taxing the people of Israel. He took about 1/3 of a year's wage from all of the adult men and gave that to Assyria in order to keep Assyria from just overwhelming their country. So they've become tributary to them. Like a wild donkey that's wandering around looking for love. See, we got a female donkey idea here. Looking for a stud donkey. And so that then gets into this next little simile. Ephraim has hired lovers. Though they hire allies among the nations, I will soon gather them up, and the kings and the princes will soon writhe because of the tribute. So they're trying to buy peace, buy off the Assyrians, but it's not going to do them any good. They will eventually go into Assyrian exile. Verse 11, because Ephraim has multiplied altars for sinning, they have become to him altars for sinning. Little play on words there, because they got tons and tons of pagan altars. The whole nation itself has become one gigantic pagan altar. Were I to write for him my laws by the 10,000s, they would be regarded as a strange thing. One of the things that we know philosophically is that law, written codes, are intended for those who won't do the right thing simply because it's the right thing to do. I mean, that's even the reason for the Old Testament law. Israel was a rebellious-hearted people whenever they came out of Egypt, so God gave them rules, gave them laws to try to make them behave. And they even fought against that. And so here is that same sort of complaint of God against Israel. No matter how many laws I give him, he keeps fighting me on it. As for my sacrificial offering, they sacrifice meat and eat it. But he who is does not accept them. The northern kingdom believes that in their worship of the golden calves, they're worshiping he who is. But God's response is, no, you're not. All those sacrifices that you're giving to the golden calves, I don't count those as sacrifices to me. Verse 13 continues, now he will remember their iniquity and punish their sins. They shall return to Egypt. For Israel has forgotten his maker and built palaces, and Judah has multiplied fortified cities. So I will send a fire upon his cities, and it shall devour her strongholds. So we've got a little reference here that the people of Israel came out of Egypt many, many centuries before. But some of them are going to be going back to Egypt. Probably we're talking about as slaves. Once the Assyrians invade, they will capture many of the survivors of their invasion. And they'll take a lot of those guys northward into their own Assyrian empire. But some of them, they'll just sell off. And Egypt was a major slave market. So there's irony here that those who came out of Egypt, the Israelis, some are going back to Egypt because they didn't live by the covenant. They were only interested in doing things the way they wanted to do it. And since Israel, northern Israel, is about to get the brunt of this judgment, Judah is reminded again, you're not innocent. You're also engaging that sort of misbehavior. So I will bring judgment upon you as well. And we know that when the Assyrian invasion takes place, southern Judah will suffer under some of that activity. They will not be taken into exile like the northern kingdom. They will not lose their capital city. God will protect both Jerusalem and the temple from the Assyrians. But they will lose some of their fortified cities to fire. Chapter number 9. Rejoice not, O Israel. Exult not like the peoples, for you have played the whore, forsaking your God. So Israel, through the ministry of Hosea, are reminded, you shouldn't be happy right now. You shouldn't be partying down like making this arrangement with Assyria was a good thing, and that it allows you to continue your lifestyle. Because what's really going on is you're acting unfaithful to me. Keep in mind that Hosea has been living out his life as an example of what's going on between God and Israel. He was told by God to marry a woman that he probably grew up with that was kind of wild in her lifestyle. She was not going to be faithful to him, no matter what. And so he marries her, raises kids with her, gives them names that are symbolic to what's going on in Israel. And then finally, she is so bad that he has to throw her out of the house, take away all her stuff. That's what's about to happen to Israel, because God is tired of them cheating on him. And so he is going to throw them out of his house, that is, out of the land, and take away their stuff that he's given to them. Now, thankfully, as we've already seen in the book of Hosea, Hosea redeems his wayward wife, and God will also redeem a remnant of Israel, and they will spend eternity with him. And so that's why we'll have some millennial passages here. But back to the problem with Israel right now. Chapter 9, verse 1, the second half. You have loved a prostitute's wages on all threshing floors. Threshing floor and wine vat shall not feed them, and the new wine shall fail them. They shall not remain in the land of he who is, but Ephraim shall return to Egypt. They shall eat unclean food in Assyria. So God reminds them, you've been playing around with all the nations around you, been making deals, and you've been worshiping other gods and goddesses that you're getting from them. Well, I'm going to take away the blessings of the land. and you will also have to leave the land. And some of you are going to end up in Assyria, and others of you are going to end up in Egypt. Verse 4, they shall not pour drink offerings of wine to he who is, and their sacrifices shall not please him. So he's going to put a stop to the sacrificial system that's happening in the northern kingdom, in particular by the worship of the golden calf. It shall be like mourner's bread to them. All who eat of it shall be defiled, for their bread shall be for their hunger only. It shall not come to the house of he who is. Again, I don't think we're talking here about the temple down in Jerusalem in verse 4. We're probably talking about the temple of the golden calf at Bethel and maybe some of the other places that have replicants of the golden calf. So God says, you're not going to just be able to have these special worship breads. You'll be lucky to have bread to eat whenever I start bringing this judgment on you. Verse 5, what will you do on the day of the appointed festival and on the day of the feast of he who is? They've got several different festivals that came out of the Mosaic Code, but the northern kingdom also has a golden calf festival in the 8th month of the year, which was supposed to be in honor of he who is that brought them out of Egypt, even though they're doing it through the golden calf. God says, what are you going to do on those days? Verse 6, for behold, they are going away from destruction, but Egypt shall gather them. Memphis shall bury them. Nettles shall possess their precious things of silver. Thorns shall be in their tents. So they're not going to have these parties anymore. They're not going to have these worship celebrations anymore. They're going to be gone out of the land. They're going to be in Assyria. They're going to be in Egypt. They're going to die in those foreign places. And the land that they used to live in is going to be overgrown. And all their precious things that were left behind will be overgrown by the lack of people in the land. Verse 7, the days of punishment have come. The days of recompense have come. Israel shall know it. The prophet is a fool. The man of the spirit is mad because of your great iniquity and great hatred. Some of these prophets that we're talking about in the book are the false prophets. And so they're crazy. They're trying to say everything's fine, that God is represented by the golden calf, and we've worked out a deal with the Assyrians, but that's not the true message. The prophet is the watchman of Ephraim with my God, and yet a fowler's snare is in on all his ways and hatred in the house of his God. They have deeply corrupted themselves as in the days of Gibeah. He will remember their iniquity. He will punish their sins. Now, Ephraim is a poetic way of referring to northern Israel during this time period. The reference to Gibeah is a tie-in to this idea of false religion and bad religious leaders that are misdirecting things and causing all sorts of trouble. There's a story in the book of Judges where a Levite had married a concubine, and he'd gone to Benjamin because she'd run away. He'd gone down to Bethlehem first and picked her up, and then he was passing through Benjamin when the sun goes down. So he gets himself a place to stay overnight at Gibeah in Benjamin, the town where Saul will eventually be born. And while he's there, the crazed population in the middle of the night want to have sex with him because he's new. And the person that he's staying with says, no, I tell you what, you can have his concubine, you can have my daughters, and you can do whatever you want to them. That's how bad it was in Israel at this time. And when everything was over with, this Levite's concubine was dead, and he chopped up her body and sent it to the 12 tribes of Israel, and they brought their armies against Benjamin and nearly wiped out the entire tribe of Benjamin. Do you remember all that? But there was a lot of other people that died at the same time. And this was God's judgment against the nation because they were not living according to the covenant. So here we have a reminder from Hosea that things are as bad now in northern Israel as they were in Gibeah back when God judged us. He's going to remember our sins. He's going to punish our sins. Verse 10, like grapes in the wilderness, I found Israel. Like the first fruit on the fig tree in its season, I saw your fathers. So now God goes back in time to when he was bringing them out of Egypt. And he expresses this as, I was happy to pick you up in the wilderness and bring you to the promised land. I saw you as a great grapevine that I was going to enjoy. I saw you as the best fruit off of a fig tree that I was going to have a good time with. That's how I saw you to begin with. But, verse 10 says, they came to Baal Peor, and they consecrated themselves to the thing of shame and became detestable like the thing they loved. That's a reference to what happened while Israel was on the plains of Moab, just a few months from going into the promised land. Moses was still alive. And some of the younger people had gone out of the Israeli encampment over to the Moabites and the Ammonites and other ites and joined them in their pagan worship of Baal Peor. And this brought God's judgment down on Israel again. So what we're seeing is reminders from their past. When we engage in uncovenant behavior, behavior that's against the covenant we have with God, we can expect judgment to come. Verse 11, Ephraim's glory shall fly away like a bird. No birth, no pregnancy, no conception. So judgment is going to have lots of impact on their society. Even if we bring up children, I will bereave them till none is left. Woe to them when I depart from them. So even the kids that get through the judgment of not getting pregnant in the first place, they're going to have a hard time because God is no longer on their side. He has withdrawn from them. Another little reminder from God. Ephraim, as I have seen, was like a young palm planted in a meadow. But Ephraim must lead his children out to slaughter. So God originally thought that Israel could be a special tree giving special fruit. But instead, they were killing their own kids in honor of Chemosh Molech. This is one of the reasons given later for them going into exile. Verse 14, give them, O he who is, what will you give? Give them a miscarrying womb and dry breasts. That's probably Hosea calling out. Judge them. Don't let them have kids since they've been killing kids off. Every evil of theirs is in Gilgal. There I began to hate them. Now the Gilgal here, I suspect, is the Gilgal near Bethel because it was mentioned in other prophecies that we're looking at. And it may be where there's a replicate golden calf temple. Because of the hatred or the wickedness of their deeds, I will drive them out of my house. I will love them no more. All their princes are rebels. So God is finished with the northern kingdom. They have crossed the line of no return. Verse 16, Ephraim is stricken. Their root is dried up. They shall bear no fruit. Even though they give birth, I will put their beloved children to death. My God will reject them because they've not listened to him. They will be wanderers among the nations. And that's exactly what happens. When the Israelis go into Mesopotamia as part of their exile, they will then begin to scatter from there into other parts of the world. Now, some of them will be coming back to the promised land during the returns under Cyrus the Great. But many of them will just simply become part of what is later referred to as the Jewish diaspora, the spreading around of the Israeli genome. This is the punishment for them not wanting to have a relationship with God. Chapter number 10, let's get started on it before we run out of time today. Israel is a luxuriant vine that yields its fruit. The more his fruit increased, the more altars he built. As his country improved, he improved his pillars. So God put Israel in a wonderful promised land with great fertile fields and hillsides and a wonderful opportunity to enjoy the produce of the land. And what does he do with all those blessings? He builds altars to other gods and goddesses. And the more blessings that he gets out of living in the promised land, the more he worships other gods and goddesses. So God says, their heart is false. Now they must bear their guilt. He who is will break down their altars and destroy their pillars. And this is exactly in accordance with the warnings in the book of Deuteronomy, that once they reached the point of no return, God was going to kick them out of the land and destroy all of the works of their hands, including their false altars and sanctuaries and worship sites. And he was going to eradicate that from the land. And only after they had repented, that is, their descendants had repented in exile, would he bring them back for another go at being useful to him in doing his will in this world.